Good evening, everyone. By way of introduction to my talk, I want to say this. When I was in my monastic training days at Zen Mountain Monastery many years ago, all of the residents of the monastery would hear beginning instruction in Zazen more or less every Friday night. And so I heard the beginning instruction in Zazen every week for 18 months. And I say this in part because I'm going to talk about something that I talked about last night at our introduction to Zen class that met for the second time. And this is an opportunity for some of you to hear it again. I want to talk tonight about the relationship between atonement, karma, and zazen, meditation practice as karmic remediation, meditation as practicing with our karma. So, in the Gatha of Atonement, which we begin each of our liturgy services with, we say, all evil karma ever created by me since of old, on account of my beginningless greed, anger, and ignorance, born of my body, mouth, and thought, now I atone for it all. Now, first, let me do a little glossary of some of these words. Karma is this one thing that refers to actions and their effects. This one thing together, actions and their effects. And karma is kind of the one way that it is manifest is in the accumulated habit energy that comes from our using our minds in our habitual ways. But our own, the karma that we create and the karma that we are heir to is not just, the things that we ourselves have done with our body, mouth, and mind, the three wheels, the three means of creating karma. But there's also karma that is inherited from our families of origin. There is karma, there is, you know, in the sense of conditioning influences, causes and conditions that lead to us being disposed to be reactive or to react in some ways. And beyond our families of origin, there is also karma that is created and inherited from the culture in which we find ourselves, our society. Zen practice, as an aside, is a profoundly countercultural act. It is turning toward precisely the things that our society conditions us, teaches us to turn away from. It is turning towards the realities of suffering. It is turning towards the realities of sickness, old age, death, loss, change, uncertainty, impermanence. Our culture teaches us that all of those things are bad, to be avoided. Indications that even aging and sickness are somehow an indication of maybe a failure of character on your part. But this is not what the countercultural practice of Zen teaches. So we inherit this karma. We are conditioned by this karma, influenced by our society's karma. And we are also, there's also the karma of being human. There is genetic karma, evolutionary karma, species karma. We are wired in a certain way. Because of our evolutionary karma, we have a impulse when a painful sensation arises. We have an impulse to push it away, to try to fix it, to try to change it. And this impulse arises so quickly that we think that pain itself is bad. But in fact, pain is a neutral physical arising. And the countercultural practice of meditation allows us to start to meet this in a slightly different way. This is why we use the container of stillness for Zazen. This is one place that we begin to practice with the karmic conditioning of instantly trying to push away discomfort. And FYI, everybody who sits Zazen is in some amount of discomfort. It is not just you. And don't imagine that because people sit still or because people have been practicing for 5 years or 10 years or 25 or 30 years that they are not experiencing discomfort in Zazen. This is the context for our practice. Each time that we, when the impulse to fix something, to shift, to scratch our nose, to make some adjustment, each time that arises and we don't respond to it by fixing it, by changing it, by trying to change the external, but instead work with meeting it just as an arising, each time we do that, we are weakening the hold of our own habit energy over us. And the stillness helps us do that. So, and karma, one image that I like to use of karma is like the accumulated habit energy of karma is like the way that wagon wheels going down the same track in a dirt road will wear a groove in it. And then that groove gradually widens and it becomes easier to fall into and harder to pop back out of. And this is the way that we reinforce our, this is kind of the feedback cycle of karmic habit energy. And part of what Zazen is by starting to provide a little bit of a context for us to shift our relationship to those habitual arisings that come because of lifetimes, beginningless causes and conditions. Each time we start to shift our relation to that, it's like by not reacting in our habitual ways, it's like pushing a little dirt into those grooves in the dirt road, diminishing the gradient, making them a little slightly easier to avoid a little bit sometimes, and slightly easier to get back out of when we've fallen in. This is what we're practicing in Zazen. And Zazen is a practice of being choicefully engaged with the karma we create. This is the alternative to just being reactively or reflectively at the mercy of whatever arises into our mind or whatever circumstances we find ourselves in. And none of us can control what does or does not arise for us. And so there is no point in human, in Zen practice, when normal human experiences don't arise. There's one passage in the Pali Suttas, the account of the historical Buddha and what he taught in this decades long of teaching. There's one place where the Buddha got a splinter, and the suttas go on for like a paragraph of synonyms to try to communicate that he was in pain because of the splinter. It said, racking, painful, sharp and burning. There's a whole lot of words describing the Buddha got a splinter and it hurt. And so there isn't the case that these things don't arise, but we are able to be with those arisings spaciously, equanimously, flexibly, choicefully. That is what we are cultivating. That is the capacity we are cultivating in Zazen. And of being in control of the karma we create, even though we are not in control of what thoughts enter our mind. We are only the only thing that we can do is gradually cultivate a capacity to notice and then choicefully respond to what enters our mind. Thoughts don't come because we decide they should come. They just kind of come. In part related to our karma and the accumulated effect of causes and conditions. So this is karma, the word. We talk in the Gatha of Atonement about evil karma. Evil in this context is a technical term that actually is not a criticism or a judgment. It is just a way of describing the karma, the actions and their consequences that lead to suffering. Evil means harm causing. Sometimes synonyms of this is rendered as unskillful or unwholesome, and that is one way of looking at and hearing what evil is pointing to. But the risk is that makes it sound kind of too minor. Because the teaching of Buddhism is that all harm created anywhere is done because of three root causes of suffering, which the Gatha of Atonement calls greed, anger, and ignorance. Grasping, aversion, and delusion. Grasping, aversion, and delusive certainty. Other ways of expressing that. All harm, anywhere, ever, is caused because of those things. And if we just use the words unskillful or unwholesome to describe what we do, there's a risk that then we reserve evil for other people. But actually, other people are, this is a universal truth that when we act from greed, anger, and ignorance, we cause suffering. And when we say beginningless greed, anger, and ignorance, we are acknowledging not just the beginninglessness of it, but the endlessness of it, and also the edgelessness of it. It is all these infinite streams of causes and conditions giving rise to this moment as it is, to these arisings as they are, the universe as it is. The Buddhist teaching is that everything arises only, and this is not just the Buddhist teaching, this is like the reality of the universe, but everything arises only because of causes and conditions. And there is a profound compassion that can come, both a compassion for self and a compassion for others, that comes when we recognize this. This is the teaching that all of our suffering is in a certain way honestly come by. It is the result of causes and conditions. Causes and conditions have led to this. And when we, some religions, like Christianity, might say, there but for the grace of God go I. But in Buddhism, we would say, there but for causes and conditions go I. There but for karma go I. That person doing that great harm over there, if I had their karma, I would be doing that. And what we are practicing in Zazen is being flexibly engaged, choicefully engaged, able to act in alignment with our values, act in the service of causing less harm. As the aspiration prayer we recited said, we act in the service of being loving. If we can't be loving, we be kind. If we can't be kind, we be non-judgmental. If we can't be non-judgmental, we at least not cause harm. And if we can't not cause harm, we continually try to cause as little harm as possible. This is the way we bring our Zen practice into the entirety of our life, is by practicing that in every circumstance. And so the word atonement is literally a compound word. It is at one mint. It is being at one with all of the harms we have caused, all of the harms, all of the circumstances that have led to us being here. It is acknowledging the reality that we ourselves have caused suffering for ourselves, for others, for the world, by getting caught up in our own karmic reactivity, our own grasping, aversion, and stories. And we have caused suffering. And atonement acknowledges that the impact of that is palpable and feelable and touchable right now, here. And we are bringing that in. And because it is right here, we are then able to respond to it from this place of being at one with past harms. We are then able to return to our aspirations, our intentions, as expressed by the aspiration prayer, as expressed by the bodhisattva vows, as expressed by our own clarified values for living. And then, because we are human, having clarified our intention, having reaffirmed our aspiration, because we are human, we inevitably fall short. Because of causes and conditioning, because of our own reactivity, our own inattention, our own humanness, we cause harm. We fall short. And then again, we atone. And I do this, I show this triangle. We aspire. We fall short. We atone. We aspire, fall short, atone. And that entire triangle, not just the aspiring, is Zen practice. And what we are practicing in Zazen is noticing when our minds are getting caught up in just their karmic conditioning and doing the things that they do. And when we see that that has happened, we unhook from that, we bring our attention back to the breath, back to the physicality of being here, back to just this. And that is That is the model of being, that is the exact skill we need in our off the cushion, outside of meditation life, to be able to have the capacity to notice to when grasping or anger has arisen, and instead of acting by grabbing on or pushing away, we are able to see that and then choicefully ask ourselves, so this has arisen. Who do I mean to be here? What are my values? In this moment, what is useful? What is skillful? What is kind? What is loving? What is in keeping with my value? And this, this practice is, about enhancing our capacity to live and respond to the world in keeping with our highest values, causing as little harm as is possible. And then screwing up, coming back, and again returning to our values. This is what is expressed in the act of atonement. This is what is expressed in each moment of practicing zazen. And in this way, we see from as in that piece called "The Essence of Atonement" that we read today, that atoning is taking refuge in the three treasures. Each moment of zazen is taking refuge in the three treasures. Atonement is nothing other than the Dharma. Atonement is the practice of the Buddha's awakening. So please sit comfortably and be invited to come forth in our practice of Dharma dialogue with questions, comments, resonances. What do you, how has the Gatha of Atonement unfolded for you? What questions or reactions do you have? What has been useful? Yeah, Nick?
I wanted to make some comments about privilege. And I have a number of privileges that apply to me. And three of them are, I'm white, I'm male, and I'm very well educated. And all of these have been great advantages in our society. And I think in the outside world, people might say, well, you did nothing to be born male, and you did nothing to deserve my race, but you worked very hard to get educated, and you perhaps deserve the benefit that flowed from that. But I come to think that's not what the Dharma teaches at all. First of all, in my judgment, my education has been far the largest of those privileges. It's helped me have interesting jobs, well paid. My economic situation is such that I don't have worries a lot of people have. But I'm well educated because my karmic conditions were such that I could get well educated. And I don't really think that's different in kind from my karmic conditions were such that I was a male. They're the same kind of thing. And all of us are what we are, as we just heard, because of karma was really beginningless and totally outside our control. Those were the conditions that produced what we are. And so the various privileges and some disprivileges I have are just what the karma of the universe dealt with me. And that seems like a very important thing to me. I'm still still not entirely sure what it implies, but it feels very fundamental.
Mm-hmm.
It's not as though I don't deserve, it's just not the case that I deserve the good things and I don't deserve the bad things. Stuff happens.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Nick. And I just want to offer one little turning here. The fact that being white and being male is an advantage is not a good in itself. That is the functioning, respectively, of patriarchy and racism, that those things are unfortunately, and to the detriment of everyone in our culture, that those things are true. Education is a little bit different in that way. But this is an important point that we shouldn't mistake. This points to the myth of meritocracy. It isn't the case that we are where we are, that we have whatever advantages that we have, that things are good for us for whatever, is because of our personal awesomeness. It is just causes and conditions. And we can't claim those as me or mine. And this is also true of when we screw up or when other people cause harm. That is also just the functioning of causes and conditions. And this doesn't, and when we see this clearly, then we recognize the great responsibility we have to, truly all beings. Any small privilege and having encountered the Dharma is an enormous privilege. Having encountered the Dharma and having had time to practice it is an enormous privilege. Being with a community of people who share that value, that is so rare. And the traditional image of this is to say, so imagine in the vast planet-sized ocean, there is a little ring of wood about the size of this Roxu ring. And once every 10 years, a turtle comes up and pokes its head out in one place in the ocean. And encountering the Dharma and having the opportunity to practice it is as rare as that turtle who pokes his head out once in every 10 years in the entire ocean, sticking his head through this one single Roxu ring. That's how lucky we are. And that is completely unearned, undeserved, unqualified for. And so we have this responsibility to everyone else. Thank you, Nick.
I like your analogy of the wagon wheel on the ground. How it's difficult for the wheel to escape that. And, the other analogy I always talk about is that the idea of a rubber band and kind of overcoming this this learned behavior, this kind of karma, this habitual action you talk about. It's a bigger rubber band, and the more you pull it, the more it resists. The bigger rubber band, and pull it on either side. Pulling out, the resistance keeps increasing more and more and more. And the effort and the determination and the discipline to overcome that grows as well. And I kind of find that to the wheel and this idea of rubber bands, kind of resistance.
Mm-hmm.
What's been so habitual, so learned, so ingrained, it's.
Hmm. I don't 100% know that I agree with that rubber band analogy, because the rubber band, the more I've clarified it for myself a little bit.
Don't take it too far.
Thank you. I'm going to make space for perhaps some of the female voices to come forward. You might be willing. Rebecca.
I had an experience just today when I was walking, and it happened several times that people on their bicycles started screaming at a vehicle, and it was this interesting moment of, oh, I've done that. And like from the outside, I was like, whoa, that's disturbing. And I could also see the person in the car either responding or in pain due to the isolation of not looking. And when I do it in the moment, I'm like, it's totally justified. You know, I feel so angry. But seeing from the outside, I thought I really need to work on that type of anger or response or fear-motivated screaming or whatever it may be. So that's a small example of kind of what you're talking about.
Yeah, I mean, so on one hand, it's a small example, but on the other hand, that is exactly the functioning of compassion. It is being able to see suffering and to see the causing of suffering and be able to recognize I am like that too. That is the practice. Thank you. Saniva.
And where we can see the joy in the situation of anger.
Yeah. So here is that. That's a really great question. And the thing that I would point to is that when we do this karmic practice of zazen, this karmic practice of putting some dirt into that groove of not fueling greed, anger, and ignorance, when we just desist from that, the thing that comes often is gratitude and joy naturally arises. And so the thing, we actually don't need to manufacture those things. We just need to stop creating, stop fueling the things that obscure them, this is kind of the teaching of our innate Buddha nature that gets covered over with the mud of suffering causing karma, and zazen we gradually scrape some of that off, and then the joy and gratitude naturally arises and shines. Thank you. Arlene.
So I'm feeling a lot of, or what's coming up for me is a lot of judgment and a lot of judgment in hearing the talk, and judging if I'm harming, or judging if I'm not harming, or doing less harm. The piece I think that also arises for me is the not knowing piece, kind of in the long view. Two things. One is the not knowing, and second is whatever's happening right now is going to change. So, like, Nick's privilege could be gone quickly, right? Things can always change. And the story that came up for me actually came up with Mike's talk, whenever that was. Was the story about the horse, and I don't have this right down in the whole Zen language.
I can tell it.
The guy gets
yeah.
a horse, and everybody goes, oh, great, the horse. You got a horse. And then his kid rides the horse and falls off the horse. Oh, the horse. What a crappy horse. What could happen? And then the army comes by and says, I want your kid. But, oh, your kid has got a busted arm. So, you know, anyway, so it goes back and forth on whether how the, and just that kind of flow and and the issue of certitude and letting go of our, or trying to say, well, this is a judgment coming out of something karmic causes me, and it may not be, it could change.
Will change.
Depending on whether or not the argument is coming through.
The thing I want to pull out there is, yes, that, this practice is not about, I'm doing harm, that's terrible, or, oh, I'm definitely sure I'm not doing harm, I'm excused, I'm in the clear here, not on me. Right? We're actually always causing harm. And it isn't about trying to decide, am I one of the good ones or am I one of the bad ones? This is why we use the word evil to just claim all of it. We are all suffering causing beings. And this question of coming into alignment with our values as best we can is, different than trying to form the judgment of, is this good that it is happening, or is this bad that it is happening? And part of, also part of the thing, part of the karma of zazen, of meditation practice, is that we are cultivating a capacity exactly to be comfortable with not knowing. Which, because of our karmic conditioning and our socialization, we're taught that not knowing is very bad, and we should replace it as quickly as possible with knowing. But what we see, what we come to see in zazen, is that that all of this is the functioning of what we call delusive certainty, and the way the practice is to be as choicefully present and as in alignment with our values as we can, while still acknowledging that ultimately we don't know. Really important stuff. Thank you. Anyone? Josh.
Yeah, I really enjoyed hearing you talk about kind of like the literal countercultural-ness of Zen, or of Zazen, or Zen. It made me really think about that concept of turning towards and how like that's really antithetical to everything in our culture, pretty much. Turning away, and how our culture tends to be very like focused on this concept of like slippery slope fallacies. The idea of like, oh well, if you start thinking about like where your shoes are made, who made them, well then you'll start thinking about how like all of this is messed up, and it's like, yeah, actually. And I feel like for me, part of what turning towards the concept of like turning towards things is about is like being like, yeah, like get on the slope, like if that's where things are, like if one realization leads to the next, like I guess letting go of what's preventing you from like accepting what you know maybe to be real, but our culture sets you up to just like continue to push it away.
Letting go has a kind of once and for all quality, and like all we have to do is let go, then it's gone. So I generally prefer letting be. And in this context, what that letting be is just seeing, oh, that's that cultural conditioning, and not taking it as truth. Our mental formations, our reactions like this, they all feel true. This is actually the nature of mental formation. Water is wet, earth is hard, mental formations feel true. That's their nature. They don't feel any other way. And part of what we are coming to demonstrate to ourselves in zazen is that feeling of truth of trueness of our mental formations. I'm going to die if I sit still for another second. That isn't as information bearing as it claims to us that it is. I'm definitely 100% accurate, is what all of our mental formations say to us all the time. And we start to see, wow, that isn't as true as I thought. Dan.
A lot about delusive certainty, righteous indignation, stuff. And it makes me think of what Mark Twain said. It's not what we don't know that gets us into trouble, it's what we know that just ain't so. And I feel like ignorance, I feel like greed, anger, and ignorance are all kind of collapsible into ignorance. And I used to tend to think of karma as sort of like a kind of universal, like Judge Wapner, like meaning that, like, oh, that was your karma, that happened to you. But it feels more now, especially after listening to you speak about it, that it's kind of a function of this universal web of causes and conditions. And what I wanted to ask is there anything outside of karma?
So, in the largest sense, no.
So is it sort of, I don't know how to explain it in a word, but the machinations of nature?
There is only the universe-universing. Everything, everywhere, always, is only ever the universe-universing. And this universe is this one thing that is the universe inclusive of us. Your other point about karma isn't like Judge Wapner applying a punishment to you. The karma of anger is the experience of anger, in the same way. And so, the acting from anger is like reaching in and taking hold of a hot coal. You aren't punished for taking hold of a hot coal, but the act of taking hold of a hot coal in order to throw it at somebody is going to burn your hand. That's the karma of engaging with it with that way. And we start to break the wheel of that by when we see these hot coals, when anger arises, not then taking hold of them and just letting them smolder over there. Bring the rest to Dokusan, Dan. Thank you, everyone. And we'll sit for two breaths and then do the four bodhisattva.